Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to the world's longest running football fans podcast from CelticUnderground.net. If you like what you hear today, you can subscribe at iTunes, and you can download or listen at a variety of places where I'm sure you can also subscribe, and these are SoundCloud, Audioboom, Spreaker and YouTube, and of course the website CelticUnderground.net. The contributors to the site and occasional contributors to the podcast can be found on Twitter. There is the long-running at Celtic Rumours Twitter feed, and then there is also myself at Harry Brady CU. There is at Hullboy, at LackeyMore1, and the catchiest of all, at Stephen62572390. Now, is that a man with a fantastic Twitter name who's doing the podcast this week? So, this is enough from me, Harry Brady. Over to him, St. Anthony, who will do the usual guest introductions. She wasn't just another one. And I couldn't keep on coming on. Been so long. Oh, and it's a hollow feeling when it comes down to dealing in friends. It never ends.
It's my pleasure tonight to be joined by Frank McGarvey on the latest podcast. And I've always got a wee list of questions here, and I don't think I've ever seen such a long list for any of the interviews that we've done, so we'll fire in right away with Frank. Now, Frank, you started your career at St Mirren, away back in the early days, so how did you come to sign up for St Mirren?
First, I was playing with Kilsyth Rangers. It took me a long, long time to get into a junior club. I was playing amateur football at Colson Amateurs under Ian French, a manager who was from Kirkintilloch area, and he had great belief in me, and he kept getting me trials for everybody, and guys were saying, we'll phone you, don't you phone us, and I kept saying to my mother, that guy's going to phone me, I've not phoned him, but and I was so naive at the time. But anyway, I got a trial for Kilsyth, joined them and trained very hard, and started scoring a few goals, and then Rangers were interested in me because this guy, Mr. Harrison at Kilsyth Rangers, he was in the Masons, and I hadn't a clue about handshakes and all that. I was extremely naive when I was younger and was getting brought up, and he kept shaking my hand to the end, and I'd done it back to him, and he thought I was in the Masons. So Rangers were looking for me, and the chief scout there was the ex-Rangers player. It's in Alec Ferguson's book, the ex-Rangers player. I forget who he is, but he was very friendly with...
Was it David Proven?
No. It was older. What was his name? It's in... I keep forgetting his name. I'll come back to it. Anyway, he was friendly with Alec Ferguson, and he just got the manager at St. Man at the time, and then he asked what school I went to. I said St. Man's Easter House, and then... they didn't want me, of course, because I was a Catholic. And right away, this chief scout at Rangers, at the time, was a great Rangers player. And he told Alec Ferguson right away to sign me. And I went down for a trial and Alec Ferguson signed me. So that was because a Mason's handshake I got signed for St. Man.
I meant to ask you in the beginning there, like, who would your football hero have been when you were a boy?
I loved Jimmy Johnson. And I love Bobby Murdoch and Kenny Dalglish. As I was getting older, Kenny, I played with Kenny at international level. But I loved Bobby Murdoch. He was just a brilliant player. I think Jimmy Johnson was, you know, I was going to Parkhead and I was watching Jimmy Johnson, and what he was doing was magic, and I loved that.
Can you remember your first game you went to?
The game I always remember going to. I always remember going in the early 70s and Tommy Callaghan was playing then, And I always remember Tommy was a good player, I thought, but he gets some stick off the Celtic fans. Mm-hmm. Celtic fans, you know, they didn't like a player, they didn't miss him. And I always remember, that always stuck in my head. I said, well, if I ever play for Celtic, I don't want to start the fans shouting at me, you know. And I think the game always was in my head was the Voice Badina game.
67,
Billy McNeil scored the winner with a few minutes to go. I always remember that game. They had a perfectly good goal disallowed. The guy shot for about 30 yards, top corner. And I don't know if it's my memory, but I definitely remember that, and it was disallowed, I think. Mm. But anyway, Celtic won that and went on to win the European Cup. So the Voice Vedina game was the one thing that sticks in my memory. But also then, I always watched forwards, Stevie Chalmers and Bobby Lennox, and I love the way they get in behind the fences.
Mm.
And I was saying to myself, I'm going to be a centre-forward, I've got to get in behind the fences, because if a centre-forward gets in behind a defence, that defence is in trouble.
Mm.
And they made a lot of trouble for a lot of defences and scored a lot of goals because of it.
So, as you said just a wee minute ago there, they ended up with St Mirren, so Alec Ferguson had a brilliant young team at the time. I spoke to Billy Starker a few months back, and he was waxing lyrical about great times that he had there. But I mean, what was Ferguson like to work with in his early days?
He was, for me, you know, when I started scoring a few goals, I was, he kept, you know, you can carry the way with yourself, but he kept my feet in the ground. I think that's probably the most important thing he done for me. Kept me in the ground, and kept me disciplined all the time. That was important for me. Billy Stark just signed at the same time as me, and the same scout, he was playing for Rangers at the time, and the same scout, Willie Thornton.
Well, Willie Thornton, though.
Willie Thornton was the scout's name, and he told Alec Ferguson to sign him as well. So, because of Willie Thornton, Alec Ferguson get Billy Stark and Frank McGarvey. He sold me, I said, Mum sold me for £275,000 and sold Billy Stark for over £200,000. Mm. So they made nearly £500,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I always remember signing for St Mirren. Kilsyth wanted £100 for me, but St Mirren were only going to pay £75. So I was getting £25 signing on fee.
Mm-hmm.
So as I said, my £25 signing on fee, just put it on the £75 and I'm a St Mirren player. Mm-hmm. I wasn't bothered about the money. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to sign for St Mirren.
Chance.
And I signed for St Mirren and I went, you beauty.
Because
nobody wanted me. Celtic came to Colson to see me a few times when I was playing amateur, because he in French, brilliant. He believed in me, completely believed in me. That he said, you'll be a professional football player, no problem, Frank. He knew. And you need somebody like that in your life. Mm-hmm. You know, a young boy needs somebody to believe in him.
Mm-hmm.
And he believed in me. And I went to St Mirren, and when I was at St Mirren, under Alec Ferguson, probably the best manager ever to coach and bring through young players. So I was very, very lucky.
Did he still have that fiery side to him when he was younger?
It was more fiery. It was more fiery. He used to throw glasses. He would, you know, if I wasn't playing that well, he would throw a glass, but he would always throw it above you.
Mm-hmm.
But what I hated was the wee bits of glass that went in your head, and then your head had a bone and we'd cut your head. You know, I had to pick the glass out of my head. I've got Larry hit me with the glass, and then I wouldn't have put all these wee bits of glass in. But the players were frightened. And I always remember there was a plumber came in one day and he had to fix it. There was a problem with the water in the toilet. It was flooding the place, so he had to come in, Russ, and he came in through the dressing room to get something. And Bergie said, what are you doing in here? Tore into him. Bergie hated anybody else in the dressing room.
Mm-hmm.
Tore in, and the plumber said, I'm the plumber. You've got a leak. It's going to overflow. He went, I'm sorry. He didn't know he was a plumber.
Well, Big Stark was saying that he used to play when he was younger in some of the Bounce games, and he was still quite aggressive on the pitch.
Yeah, and something else, he always taught me to use my elbows. He said, use your elbows and elbow guys in the rib. You know what I mean? As you're coming away for a player, just give him a good elbow in the rib. And I done that, you know, but it was a good thing, you know what I mean? But guys didn't like it, getting elbowed in the ribs, you know, and you get hard tackles anyway. But at that time, they could really just hammer you with tackles.
Oh, I know, it was bad.
Hammer you. It's unbelievable, and not even get booked.
Mm-hmm.
See, if the ball went in the same direction as the tackle was okay. Mm-hmm.
So So you and Tony Fitzpatrick were the most highlighted players in Scotland in 1979, and the two of you went down to England, and you get the plum transfer, if you like, going to Liverpool. Now, that must have been some feel, that Liverpool team, but I know they weren't the European champions at the time, but they were just about the best team in Europe for that period.
Were they champions
at that time?
1978, they won. Kenny Lewis scored. Mm-hmm. But I went there, that was amazing. That was really amazing. And Liverpool were so well run, it was unbelievable. But I went down there, and Kenny Lewis, who I love watching. I love watching Kenny. Brilliant player, great vision, scores brilliant goals, just an incredibly good player. Mm-hmm. And I think I think he was a brilliant Liverpool player. I don't think he was as good a Scotland player, and maybe not as good a Celtic player. He was just an unbelievably outstanding Liverpool, probably the best Liverpool player ever to have played for Liverpool, in my view, and the fans loved him. Mm-hmm. He was magic at Liverpool. So I went down there to replace David Johnson. He just got in the team, and he scored about 30 odd goals that season. Mm. And every week the second team would be coming home. We used to play our games early, about 1 o'clock, and we'd be coming home, and it'd be half time over to Liverpool, and at Liverpool 4, Southampton 0. We were like, oh god, this team not ever going to get beat. Every game they were winning with 3 and 4 goals. Mm-hmm. And it was David Johnson, I was there to replace David Johnson, and I had to go by David Fairclough, who was playing for me, with me in the second team. David Fairclough were playing the second team, and we had Ronnie Whelan, Sammy Lee, and Kevin Sheedy in our midfield. And Grzywicz at the back, and with brilliant defenders. Abby Cohen was one of them. And
Richard Money must have been there, I know. No.
Don't remember him.
Howard Gale
was outside right. He was the fastest ever outside right I've ever seen in my life, but he couldn't cross the ball.
But what was only said there was that the thing about Liverpool is that I think younger people who are listening to this wouldn't appreciate how small squads were in the days. I mean, even though they were a successful team, they wouldn't have been any more than 14, 15 at that point, including yourself.
No, Liverpool. That's why Liverpool were such a good team, because, see, the first team, they all knew that if they didn't play consistently every week, there was somebody to take their place in the second team. Mm. That's what Liverpool done. That's how Liverpool were so good. Every position, David Fairclough and me were putting pressure on David Johnson, and the first team, because Kenny wasn't going to get dropped.
No.
And anyway, they end up, David Johnson got injured, and I said, I'm in, because I'd scored 26 goals or something for the second team, and David Fairclough had scored about 10. I said, I'm a bit ahead of him. So he came the day, and then he says, David Fairclough, you're in, Frank, you're sub. I was like, I'm sub. I was raging. I said, but Bob Paisley was a great manager, and I went into him on the Monday after that. I think we were playing Ipswich at home, and I said, listen, I should be getting a chance. I've scored 26 goals. You've brought me down to Scotland. I've scored 26 goals in the second team, a lot more than David Pepper. I'm playing better than him, and he's first choice ahead of me. I said, you're not giving me a chance. I want a transfer. And that's my transfer.
Looking back now, do you regret that? Because the whole thing about the Liverpool thing is like guys like Ian Rush and a few other famous players had to stick it out for a season or two in the reserve before they were.
Well, to be honest with you, Terry McGuire and Graham Souness always said to me, I was in the first team dressing room, and we were like, you just got to be patient, Frank, you just got to be patient. But, you know, playing in front of 1,000 people.
You just want to play, don't you?
I just wanted to play football, and I was playing for St Mirren at Ibrox, 50,000 people, at Celtic Park, 50,000 people. I loved that. Mm-hmm. I loved playing in big crowds, and I was sitting playing, and 1,000 people come to watch us. But what a second team that was. Mm. We won that league easy. Mm. Hammered everybody. Went to Manchester United, their second team, hammered them. But it was because Liverpool had that brilliant second team. Mm. They kept all the players in the first team. Although you didn't think that was a great squad, that was a squad of about 26 Liverpool had. But it was 26 quality players that anybody in the first team, you weren't doing it, the guy in the second team, poof, right in. But Bob Paisley did say to me, he said, once you get a chance, Frank, I'll give you 6 games. He did say that to me, but I said, no. I said, listen, I knew Because I spoke to Alec Ferguson, who's at Aberdeen, and when I was in at Liverpool, Sir Alex now, he phoned me every week. John Clark would phone me every 2 weeks.
Just to see how it was going?
Oh, how are you getting on, Frank? Just to get, you know what I mean? How are you getting on? I'm getting on fine, just still playing for the second team, you know what I mean? They would phone me. Fergie phoned me a lot of times and said, who do you think I should get up front? I always remember him saying, he was going to buy Dougie Bell. I said, well, you've got to discipline Dougie. And then I was talking to him about the players. Fergie done that at St Mirren as well. He would say to me, who's the best goalkeeper you think you played? You know, ask me wee things. And I always said, Billy Thompson, Patrick Thistle, I think he was playing. I said, he's a great goalkeeper. So St Mirren ended up getting him. I don't know if it was Alec Ferguson at the bottom, but he would always ask people, what do you think, who do you think, you know, and that's where he got a lot of information. He would probably know in his own head, but the best players to ask are the players who are playing against these people, because they know, they'll get first hand experience with these players are playing against.
So you were coming back to Scotland for Liverpool, and you had two choices, Celtic and Aberdeen, but it's interesting to know that Aberdeen offered you more money. Is that true?
They offered me slightly more money to sign, but not as much money on wages. Jesus. But when I went down to Liverpool, when I went down to Liverpool, I got £12,500 sign on fee, plus I was getting £425 a week then, which was very good money in 1979. But I got that all, and I always remember getting £12,900 for my first wage. I was a wee boy at Easterhouse about 5 years earlier, and I get £12,900, and I wanted to. We could have paid a mortgage off down there in our house and bought a nice car if I got that money. But I forgot there was tax coming off it, and I went up to see Peter Robinson after it because I couldn't understand how I get £12,900 top line and I was only getting £2,200 bottom line. It was because in 1979 it was 83% tax.
Oh my god, that's unbelievable.
So for every £1,000 I got, I was getting, the tax man was getting £830, and I was getting £170. Oof. And I was listening to the group's Queen talking about it the other day there, and they were saying that they were getting hammered with tax in Britain. That's how they had to go outside Britain.
I think they called it super tax in the days because it was so high.
Oh, 83% of us. That's high.
So you came to Celtic, and in the first couple of weeks, you had the pleasure of scoring the winning goal against Rangers in an all-firm game. Well, so that must have been some memory.
Well, to be honest, I wasn't fit when I started playing for Celtic. I wasn't match fit. Although you think, oh, the English league's a lot quicker. It's no, actually then the Scottish league was quicker, and I wasn't fit enough when I signed for Celtic in the March to the May. I couldn't get myself back up to that fitness that I needed. I needed games, and I needed, because when I was playing for Liverpool's second team, we would be 1-3-0, and you would cruise the second half. So there was no pressure on you to use extra energy that you had, because the game was won. It was easy, and we strolled games, and Liverpool played such a good system that they made the ball work as well. They had a brilliant system, brilliant setup, and a brilliant place to play your football. And I do regret, because Howard Gale, who I didn't rate at all, he got a European Cup winner's medal.
Yep.
For Liverpool, and I would have been in the team before him. I would have got that. But in saying all that, my dream all my life was my first game against Rangers. I'd be nothing each, it'd be 2 minutes to go, I'll build the Celtic end and I'll score the winner. And that's exactly what happened. So, okay, I could have done something at Liverpool, but right away, within 2 weeks, my dream came true.
Do you remember that goal?
Oh, I always remember it. Roy Aiken.
Like Roy, he did well keeping it in.
Roy Aiken made me a lot of goals. Roy Aiken, he ran for it. He never gave up, Big Roy. Backheeled it, crossed it to me, 2 minutes to go, and I nailed it. Right, I always headed the ball down against Peter McCloy, because he couldn't get them, and I headed it down, and I ran to the jungle. That's the fastest I've ever ran. I ran to the jungle, and I just said, heaven on earth.
So, what I've got done here is, I've done a wee bit of research, and you had a great record against Rangers. It was 22 games, won 13, drawn 4, lost 5. Not many guys have got that in them.
I thought it was a bit better than that, because, but you've got to remember that the team I played in was myself, Charlie Nicholas up front. Now, when us two played, we hardly ever get beat against Rangers. David Proven, he is the best crossing the ball Celtic I've ever had. He was an expert at crossing the ball. He would put side spin and top spin in the ball, and it always dipped at the end, and I knew a ball would be coming in, it would be dipping, and I could get in front of people. I scored a goal against Rangers at Ibrox. He took a free kick in the 4-2 game. We were going to beat 2-0 at half time. And he crossed the ball, and I knew it was coming down, and I got in front of Peter McGloy and ahead of it. I knew that was happening. You know what I mean?
That would have been a bullet, so it did.
I didn't have to do it, I just had to redirect, but I knew it was dipping, but Peter McGloy didn't know. So I was playing with, so to have that record, I was playing with.
We'll go into Charlie and that later on, but at the moment, 1980, we blew the league. After you signed it, and you know, there was a point that we beat Real Madrid, and then we get beat in Madrid, which was a downer, and then you signed it, it gave everybody a lift. So can you put your finger on what went wrong at the end of that season?
I wasn't fit enough really to do myself justice at the end of that season, and I came in, and everybody says beat Rangers tonight and you more or less win the league, because the rest of the teams. And I think what happened is, this happens a lot. See, once you think you've won the league, that's when you lose it. You must keep going on to the very end. And we thought, after the Rangers game, we thought we'd won the league. And see, as soon as you think you've won something, that's when you lose it. See, Aberdeen, the next season, they went 5 points clear of us at Christmas.
That's right.
Right? At Christmas, they beat us and they thought they'd won the league, and we came back to win it the season after. The roles were reversed. That season we thought we'd won it, and that's when we lost it. And as soon as Aberdeen beat us, I think it was Boxing Day.
4-1.
4-1, they hammered us. They thought they'd won the league, and we came back and won the league easy. And Aberdeen won the league easy that season as well. So I'm a great believer. Once you think you've won something, that's when you lose it. And that's exactly what happened.
So a few weeks after that, or a week after that, we lost the league. It was at the Cup Final, the Riot Cup Final. So what's your memories of that? Both the game and what happened, the nonsense afterwards?
Well, I always remember that I had a few chances in that game, and I never done that well from the March to the end of April. I never done that well. I wasn't happy with my play. I wasn't fit enough, and I was unhappy. But I always remember Danny McGrane running forward. And Danny's not got the greatest shot in the world. And other Rangers players, they know Danny. And I turned their back, and it came to George McCluskey. George knew that it might come to him. George flicked it in the corner. And that was my first trophy for Celtic. Within a few months, I'd won a trophy. So then after the game, I was reflecting and going, well, I'd done the right thing leaving Liverpool. I would have been in the second team for the year after that, and now I've won a Scottish Cup. Isn't that brilliant in front of all the fans? It was just a magical day.
And what about the riot after
it? I knew nothing about it.
No.
We went into the dressing room, we went up to the hotel on Great Western Road, the Grosvenor, and we had a party, a brilliant party that night, and I knew nothing about the riot. I didn't know anything about the riot to the day after.
So you mentioned Charlie there, and that brings us on to the 1980-1 season. Now, Charlie was only a boy breaking in, but a partnership, is that something that you'd have worked on, or is it just a wee bit of luck that the two of you came together at the same time?
Me and Charlie had, you get two players that come together and they've just got that chemical thing between them. It works. Manchester United won the European Cup under Alec Ferguson because of the two players that was up front,
York
and Cole. They had that magic between them. They scored goals between them. Nobody else would have scored. And Charlie, although he never made a lot of goals for me, I made a lot more goals for Charlie than he did for me, but Charlie took the pressure off me. If I'm maybe having a bad game, Charlie go, get a goal, and put 1-0, that takes the pressure off me. And then I get a chance, and then I score. So Charlie was it was great for me because I like to go in behind the fences and Charlie came short. So teams had a dilemma then. What do they do? Do they mark me and let Charlie come short? Mm-hmm. Or do they go after Charlie and let me get room in behind? Mm-hmm. So Dundee United especially couldn't handle that because they played a square back four. Aberdeen handled it a bit more, but if Charlie get the ball and turned in front of a defence, that defence was in trouble because Charlie was such a brilliant striker of the ball that you gave him a yard, he'll put it in for 20 yards, 8 yards, it didn't matter with Charlie, he was such a good striker of the ball.
What's worthwhile pointing out is that Charlie, young players come in and have a couple of good games and then they fall away, but Charlie that season came in and just blew everybody away. I mean, I think off the top of my head he scored something like 15 goals in his first 15 games or something. That was amazing.
28, that season he scored 28 goals because I beat him. I scored 29 goals. But he was a selfish player, which I've always got to be. He never really made me a lot of goals, but as I said, he'd take the pressure off me. Mm-hmm. And he's a great foil for me. He was the perfect foil for me. Mm-hmm. So he was, and I just loved playing with Charlie. He was a genius for 2 years. The Celtic fans adored him. Mm-hmm. And he was every club in Europe wanted him, and he was on £90 a week.
You were top scorer in Scotland, as you said there, in 1981. You got 29 goals. Now, would you say the hat-trick against St Mirren was a highlight that season?
That was a highlight because at half-time I scored a brilliant goal.
That's actually a goal I think everybody remembers you from, during that period.
Well, it was just before half-time and I put the ball, I beat Alec Beckett and Billy Abercrombie and then John Young came in and I beat him and as I hit the ball, if you ever see that goal, the reason I hit it so well is the ball bobbled up an inch as I hit it. So it was really a volley, and that's why I went in so hard. That's why I struck the ball so well, because it was a volley, and no goalkeeper in the world would have ever saved that. And the fans went crazy. So I waved to the fans and they were roaring. I was still roaring for about 30 seconds after it. And then I was at that and they were ready to take their centre. Mm-hmm. And just as that was happening, I gave another wave to the jungle and another big roar went up. And I was like, oh my goodness, I've never seen that before. And I've never had, my stomach churning the way it was. And I was like, oh my God, because I had nothing to eat. I would never eat on a Saturday. And my belly was jumping. And I was like, oh my God. What do you call that again? When your stomach's...
Butterflies.
Butterflies in my stomach. Can you believe it?
And the half-time whistle went just the slightly later.
And then I went in and the stand gave me a standing ovation and a cheering. And that was, I could accept any amount of praise, you know, because when you're a football player, you've got a good size ego as well, and you take all that praise coming. That was the only time that all that praise came and my body couldn't handle it. And I went in at half time, and Big Bully, see, if you were playing well, that's when Big Bully, if he had any stick to give you, he would give you a stick. So me and David Problem were playing well that day, I think, and he said to David, or whoever it was, he said, "You, David, you should be doing this." And then I was in the toilet, and he said, "You, Frank." He was going to get into me about a few mistakes, and all he heard was me being sick in the toilet. And the whole place burst into laughter. And it laughed, you know, that dressing room that day, it laughed for 10 minutes in the dressing room because I was sick. And went out in the second half. I was fighting for the second half. Went out in the second half. And because the team was happy and enjoying themselves, we scored another 4 goals. I should have hit, I had a chance to hit about 6 goals that day. And I hit the post and just by the post, a lot of my shots. And I could have hit 6, but I hit 3. And
7-0, I ended up.
7-0. And is that not what football's all about?
Well, so much so that we're talking about after all these years. Now, you also had a good partnership with George McCluskey when Charlie fell out the team the next season. And I always remember Billy McNeil went on record as saying, "I've got a difficult thing here," he says. "I've got 3 interviews and I'm going to go. He says, but I always put Frank in. He says, because Charlie and George are too similar.
That's right.
And I think that it was quite a tribute that he paid to you, that you'd have been in front of. Not saying you were a better player than the two, but I think what he meant was that you and George could work in tandem and you and Charlie could work in tandem. Because I remember one game at Ibrox that Charlie and George played up front and they just stood about waiting for the ball to come, because they were looking for you to do the donkey work.
That's right. Well, I worked hard as a centre forward. I would make shallow runs and get in behind full backs. Danny McGrain was great at putting the balls in.
He was
great.
Space.
But he would put the ball in and curl it into you. He was a great. But you know, you're talking about my record against Rangers, which is exceptional. But I mean, it's only exceptional because I played with guys like Danny McGrain, me at midfield. My favourite midfield was Paul McStay, Murdo McLeod and Tommy Burns. Now, they three midfield players would guarantee you 8 to 12 goals a season.
Each.
That takes some pressure off the forwards. I always remember I played against Dundee United one day, and Billy put George McCluskey and Charlie Nicholas on and played them for the full game. And I always remember walking off the park. I was still subbing, never put me on. And the fans like that. No wonder you're not looking very good, Frank. That's a disgrace, no playing you today. And Big Bully got me into the office on the Monday and said, Frank, he says, I made a mistake not playing you on Saturday. He said, you'll never be out my team again. Mm-hmm. And I was never out his team again.
Well, I remember that quote in the paper for that time. Now, it's worthwhile pointing out as well.
That's amazing. I didn't know that quote was made.
Well, it might not have been word for word what you're saying there, but he definitely went on record as saying things, because the game I remember is the one at Ibrox, then you came on about 10 minutes to go, but we could beat 1-0, and Nicholas and McCluskey, great players, but they were too similar in style, and they just didn't click that day.
That's right.
But the thing about George is...
But two good players.
Oh, aye, well, the point you're going to make is everybody raves about Charlie, but I think George McCluskey's a bit of a sort of... He tends to get forgotten about a wee bit, because George had as much talent as anybody I've ever seen play for Celtic.
George McCluskey was a brat. I loved playing with George, because George would make me more goals than Charlie. Mm-hmm. But Charlie would score more goals than George. Mm-hmm. But I loved playing with Charlie, because I loved watching what he would do in the park. And the goal for me, the highlight for Charlie for me, was the Ajax goal. He chipped the goalkeeper. That was a magic night. We beat them 2-1 over there. And George was a brilliant player to play with. He could score goals. He could turn a guy. And by the way, he was a great striker. George was some player. It's only because Charlie was so good. Mm-hmm. And I remember them saying, when Charlie went away and Frank McGarvey trying to do his best now, I scored 50 goals, I think, in the two seasons Charlie was there. In the two seasons, which was brilliant for me. And everybody's like, Frank McGarvey trying to get back up to be a good centre forward. I'd done my bit. The one thing that in my career that I don't get any praise for is the amount of goals I made and the work I put in and the amount of goals that I made. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't realise. I've started watching a lot of the old games, which are coming on YouTube, and I think I made, for every goal I scored, I made a goal. Mm-hmm. And that pleases me to be like that, a team player. But seeing all that, Murdo McLeod scored some goals. Paul McStay, brilliant player, made me a lot of goals. Tommy Burns, he didn't make me a lot of goals, but Tommy was a great player. He could score goals. David Robbins scored free kicks. Tom McAdam has come up. Tom McAdam, the amount of times he scored for Rangers was incredible. And me, Charlie and George scored over 100 goals 1982-83 season and never won the league.
Well, come on to that in a wee minute, because what we've done here is there were some great characters at Celtic, and you've touched on a couple of them there, and maybe the two biggest characters maybe were Johnny Doyle and Tommy Burns. And the reason why I say that is Mick Conroy got in touch with me when I said that I was meeting you. And he says, as Frank, if he remembers going to Germany and somebody played a trick on him, he says, I don't think, if he knows it after all these years, it was Tam. And apparently you thought it was Doyle, and you went after Doyle, and it was a big fight.
No, I think you got that wrong. But Doyle was like, he always says, I'm the man. Mm-hmm. I'm the man, and I'd scored a few goals, and I was getting up, you know, like that. And we'd wind each other up, and we're in Germany, and the bus was leaving at 2 o'clock. And I said to Big Bully, what time is the bus leaving at? 2 o'clock, and I said to, I went in to the boys, we were all sitting, and I said, but just like, you know, boys, I'm the man. Anybody else says anything else, getting a doing. You know what I mean? I would never fight, though. Like, you'd have to kill him to beat him, you know what I mean? He'd just keep fighting you back. And I said, I'm the man. So I went like 1:45, I went a walk, and I came back, and Doyle said, I'm the man. I said, well, I'll give you 2 o'clock to get you here and coming in. The bus was late. I couldn't believe the bus was late. So 2 o'clock, I had to go in because I couldn't back down. And mm-hmm. I said to him, I'm the man. Anybody got any problem with that? Joyle said, I've got a problem. He's sitting at the back. I said, have you, pal, up here, sort it out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Winding him up. But he took it really serious. And then I said, I'm coming up to get you to throw you out to kid of one. Mm. Strong wee guy, Doyle.
Mm, he was wiry, wasn't he?
Oh, wiry, strong wee guy, determined guy. You can see why he had that in his football career. And I went up and we were wrestling each other. And I was like, I said, he was really taking it serious. I said, Doyle, no, I'm kidding on. He hit me in a neck pull. And I had to do something that I didn't want to do. And I done it, and that released his grip. Me, I had to grab somewhere. He didn't like that. So that released me, and I was like, "Ah, well, I'm not doing that again," you know. Mm. But the players, we had a laugh.
Well, the way Conroy describes it, he says it was an extension of school. We were just half boys carrying on. He says it, and then we get paid to play football. He says it was a life that you know. He thought it was he died and went to heaven.
That was heaven for me. Mm-hmm. To go and play for Celtic, the team I loved when I was a young boy, to score my first game against Rangers, to score with 2 minutes to go and the winner, it just doesn't get any better than that. And that was magic. And see, when I scored that goal, I always said to myself, I done the right thing coming to Celtic. Mm. And now I've been around the world. So I was in San Francisco a few years ago. I've been to a lot of places, and Celtic fans are just amazing. And now I always say to myself, I done the right thing. Good. Leaving Liverpool and going to Celtic, that was a good decision. And I love Glasgow as well, and I love the Glasgow people. So it was a right decision.
So we're moving on to 82-83 now. I would say that the first half of that season, the football that Celtic played was as good as anything I've ever seen. Right, and that's going back to the Jock Stein years all the way through to Martin O'Neill and the real good teams that we had. And we won the League Cup, but we were unlucky against Sociedad and the European Cup after beating Ajax. But as you said there, like, there was goal scorers throughout the team, but there wasn't, see, this holding midfield player. That didn't exist in the days. I mean, your midfield players were expected to score. You know, we didn't have any defensive players. Maybe that was a bit of a weakness.
It definitely was a weakness in European. I always remember the Real Sociedad game. We played them over there, and it was easy for us. We're drawing nothing each. Easy. They get 2 deflected goals and 2 shots deflected. They went into the goal. We had that game easily. A nothing each draw over there, and they beat us 2-0. And then we came back to Parkhead. They had 1 guy for a corner after 10 minutes, and nobody was marking. He scored. And then that was us 3-0 down.
That killed the tie, didn't it?
That killed the tie completely. And they knew how to defend. But I think the only reason that Celtic never won a European trophy in the early 80s, because that was some team, was as a team, we were not good at defending as a team. I don't blame anybody. Mm-hmm. I don't blame the defence. To be fair, the forward line didn't have to defend that well, but we still had to cut out the fullbacks. But the midfield, Tommy Burns would go forward, and then he would leave a big gap. Mark Reid would be behind him. So if they'd broken us, it was Mark who was the first guy to go in, and he was the last line of defence. And then Tom McAdam, who was a great player. The amount of goals he scored against Rangers is unbelievable. Mm. But he was a great player, but I don't think he was a real centre-half. Mm-hmm. Roy Aiken for me was a brilliant midfield player. But he played as sweeper because we had so many good.
It's funny you say
players.
That because there's still debates to this day about what was Roy's best position.
Midfield, whole midfield player, mm-hmm. and then when they had to go forward, they go forward. Mm-hmm. No problem. Mm-hmm. Roy was never a sweeper. Mm-hmm. Never a sweeper. Brilliant holding midfield player, and he would get forward. Roy Aiken, when I went out to play against Rangers or any big team, and I looked at Big Roy and I stood beside Roy, Big Roy. I was a very happy man to go on the park with Big Roy. He never let that team down.
So the 82-83 season, I say the first half was unbelievably good. I mean, we're beating teams right, left and centre. And yet...
Up to January,
and then around about February, March time, things began to, you know, fall away a wee bit. Tommy got injured and we didn't really have a left midfielder.
That's right.
And so things began to happen. But I've got a wee theory, I don't know what you think about this. I ran it by Davy Prover and he certainly didn't think that's the case. I think that, remember Charlie, the big transfer talk after the new year coming with Charlie, and he used to be on the St. Greavesy a lot of weeks, and Jimmy Greaves would be shouting, oh, you need to come to England, and all these English scouts every game. As a professional, would that have unbalanced you a wee bit, when one guy gets all the attention? Because this was a great team. Although he was a great player, he was playing in a team full of great players. And I think, looking back, that there was too much media speculation about him and upset the balance.
I don't think it upset the players. I always remember a game we played Hibs. I made Charlie 3 goals and I scored 2 and we won 5-3. And it says Charlie, and then come to the end, and Frank McGarvey also scored 2 and made Charlie 3 goals and had a fine game. I would get no praise at all, but I wasn't bothered about that. And the other players were not bothered about that. But I think you're right. I think that was it one player getting all the praise all the time, and it was a team game. Now, Charlie couldn't score all the goals, no less other players, Paul McStay, David Proven, and all these players, and myself, were making Charlie the goals. He was in a brilliant team. And by the way, see that team? They all loved each other. We got on brilliant, went for a drink together, went everywhere. If you get the player of the year, Dunning Greenock, me and David Problem would go with him. Always three players went to every do, and we always went to the Celtic do's. But I think you're right. I think it was Charlie every week. And I think there's no problem in the dressing room, but I think that was a bearing on, but to keep playing that football. I don't know if it was that year we played Ajax, but that was the finest 90 minutes of football ever played in Ajax. The whole game, 2 weeks game, Ajax were magnificent, and so were we that night. So were we. And I was saying to myself, we were on the par of it. They were just out. That was the best game of football I ever played in my whole life. The 2 weeks game, Celtic Ajax. It's on YouTube, man. It is unbelievable. Their 2 goals are out of this
world. Must have been a big thrill to play against Cruyff. To be in the same pitch as him, must have been something else.
Cruyff was, he was in his 30s then, and he controlled Ajax that night. They were magnificent. They scored 2 of the best goals you'll ever see at Parkhead. The moves and the one touch stuff was just out of this world. They were just, that game was just a joy to play in. But we had brilliant, as I said, that midfield. And I also remember Bernie McNeil played with me, Charlie and George up front in one of the games in David Robin, and George and Charlie scored and I scored 2 in the game. We won 4 now Celtic are playing with one up the front. I think Dyla's a good manager and all that, and he's doing well, and he'll probably win the treble, but I just can't not get one up front.
Neither can I, but that's maybe an argument for another day. But the one thing that I always felt was that the time that we were playing all this great football, only Danny was getting a game for Scotland, right, on a regular basis. David got a game now and again, Big Roy would get a game now and again, but I mean, guys like Tommy and yourself and Murdo were criminally undervalued in terms of getting Scotland caps. So is that something you were aware of at the time?
Well, I went down to Liverpool, right? I went down to Liverpool, and when I was at St Mirren, I never got a cap at all, although I was top goal scorer for St Mirren. I was scoring 20 Premier League goals in a season for St Mirren, which was outstanding to do that for St Mirren, and I couldn't even get in the Scotland team, and I scored 29 goals. But I went down to Liverpool. As soon as I went down to Liverpool, I got my first cap against Argentina.
Was that the Maradona game?
I said, I'm not even in the Scotland team, and now I'm playing for Liverpool. I hadn't even played a game for Liverpool, and I'm playing against Maradona, and I hadn't played a game for 6 weeks, and I was thrown in, and I could have had 2 or 3 good chances in that game. And if I would have scored a goal in that game, I would have been kept in. And then they went abroad just after that game, or I think they played Sweden, and I wasn't in the squad, I was put out of the squad. Although, but I think going to Liverpool, Jock Steen and Bob Paisley were very close.
So how did you go on with Steen in the Scotland caps that you got?
Well, I thought I was the top goal scorer for Celtic in 1981, and I couldn't get a Scottish cap.
That was my point there. But I think you were entitled to expect a better return of caps.
I wasn't even in the squad.
But it's not just you, but I mean, me, Murdo and Tommy. You know, Tommy didn't go to the 82 World Cup, which is the last sore point.
Tommy deserved more caps than he got. I deserved more caps than I got. But there was a lot of good centre forwards at the time. Kenny Dalglish was in, and you had Andy Gray was flapping about. Joe Jordan was in there. Wee Guy Wallace, myself,
Archibald, all these guys.
Archibald. Present. Some of them are good centre forwards. You know.
So in 1983, Billy McNeil left. Now Billy signed you, and I think the players were used to Billy's way of working. And it must have been a bit of a shock when he went quite suddenly and Davy Hay came in as manager.
It was a big shock because Billy had won three leagues, three Scottish Cups in about four or five seasons. And that was the highest standard of Scottish football, except for the late 60s. They were on parallel because Dundee United were getting into European finals and Aberdeen won a European... they won, was it?
A Cup Winners' Cup.
A Cup Winners' Cup. So that's how you gauge Scottish football, how the teams do in Europe. And Scottish football was very, very high. Scotland were always getting into the World Cup. So Scottish football was very, very highly rated in the world, in world football. And we were creating good players all the time. And we had all the good centre forwards in the early 80s. And, you know, getting in the Scotland squad is, there's a lot of politics involved there as well, I'm afraid to say, at that time. And I wouldn't have been a great politician either. But, you know, Jock Steen, if I'd have stayed with Liverpool, I would have been in the Scotland squad all the time. But because I went back to Celtic, because I know Jock Steen said to Bob Paisley to buy me.
So what when Billy left him, was it fair enough to say that Billy McNeil was a motivator but Davy was a better tactician?
Billy brought in good players and get everybody together, and it was a great team. I loved playing under Billy McNeil. Davy Hay came in and wanted to, he signed Brian McLeod, a brilliant signing. And he brought in Mo Johnson as well. It was a good signing. So all of a sudden, but that's in Celtic's history, they've always brought in a lot of good forwards into their teams, but they've not brought a lot of good centre-halves and good defensive players. And I think Celtic should, you know, over the years, if they went for better defenders, they had a better chance of winning European competitions. You've got your good defences, and that's the difference between us and Dundee United and Aberdeen. Was Dundee United and Aberdeen defended as a team much better than Celtic.
Well, I mean, getting back to yourself and Tommy and Murdo, Davy Proven, I don't think he's ever reproduced your best form under Davy here. I don't know if it was maybe a psychological thing because Billy had left, but you were still performing at a high degree. But I just feel that when Billy was there, he's were performing at a higher level.
Yeah, I think when a new manager comes in, if the manager that bought you is still there, he's always going to play you because he can't not play you because he bought you. And Davy Hay bought Brian McLeod and Mo Johnson, and then Alan McInally was there as well. But I was still scoring goals and making goals. I was very happy with my form. And I see some games and go like, Alan, Brian McGarvey, now performing to a good level after Charlie Nicholls left. I was like, I was always performing at that level. I just, you never seen it for Charlie. Well, that really angers me when I see that.
Well, the thing is, Charlie was top scorer. Well, I know you were a top scorer in 81, but he was second top scorer in 81. George was top scorer in 82. Charlie was top scorer in 83 and Brian McLaren was top scorer in 84, but the common denominator is that you were their strike partner.
That's right.
So you were providing a lot of goals for these guys.
I'm actually amazed. I've been watching a lot of the goals. I've never seen them. There's goals that I didn't even know that I scored. I'm seeing them going, oh my God, did I score that? And but I'm very pleased. I was more a team player, and if I'm going through and goal, I would rather make sure it was a goal by passing to the other player.
Mm-hmm.
But I always remember Charlie, we were playing Motherwell once, and he used me as a decoy three times and scored a wonderful goal at Fir Park one day, put it in the top corner. Brilliant goal, but he used me as a decoy three times.
Remember that goal, man?
Aye. And I've kept running because what happened for me, I said, pass it, man. Then he beat the guy again. Then, but what a goal.
See, if he'd missed that, he'd have been
missed it. I was after him. And he knew that. That he was such a good striker. Mm. Top corner. What a goal. I had to applaud. Although he used me.
That was 7-0 as well, that day.
7-0 as well, right? We were in a lot of 7-0s.
That brings us up to 85, the cup final. And Davy Proven's got a phrase, a saying that he uses. Everybody wants a signature moment in their career. You want to be remembered for something. Now, I remember you I could sit here all day and talk about good games that you played and the great team that you played in, but there's no getting away from the fact that both you and Davey will always be remembered for the 85 Cup final. But see, for 70 minutes that day, we couldn't kick a ball.
Unbelievable. It was unbelievable. We were trying hard. We'd done everything that day. We had a good team. Davey Hay was sitting, he had not won anything.
He was under pressure.
I couldn't believe I was playing that day. When we played Hamilton in the third round, we were going to beat 1-0 at half time, and he asked me to come on. He said, Frank, do me a turn. I went on and scored him two goals. And I scored, and then he played me another game.
You scored the winner against Dundee in the quarterfinals, I know.
Dundee, and Davey Whitney, he would always want Brian McLaren and Mo Johnson up front. But then we played Motherwell, I think, in the semis. We drew nothing each, we wouldn't play him. I was sub. Then there was nothing each with 60 minutes to go, and they threw me on and we won 3-0. I made me more a goal and we won 3-0 when I went on. And then we were down in Seamill before the Scottish Cup final, and he told me, he said, listen, I'm playing you on Saturday. I went, what? I didn't even think I would be sub before that game, because he wanted to play with Brian McLaren and Mo Johnson up front. And he played me in front of Brian McLaren, and I said, what's he playing me for? I said, Davey Hay didn't want me in the team anymore.
Do you think that was a long-standing thing, or was it something that just came out?
He bought Brian McLaren, he bought Mo Johnson, and he brought in Alan McInally. He wanted me out, Davey. Although I was still scoring,
Alan McInally was in that bracket.
Yeah. I know, but what I'm saying to you is, they had the three players in there, but then he told me on a Thursday, I always remember, because the week before, I think we went to Manchester for a game or something happened like that, and I wasn't even in the squad. And I said, I always remember David Proven saying, you're back in the squad. I said, I don't know what's happening, really, to be honest with you. And then he came and told me on Thursday, he said, I'll be playing you on Saturday. That took my breath away.
Well, I'll give him his doing one thing. He made two of the bravest substitutions that I will ever see in my
fantastic.
Life.
Fantastic.
Because see when he took off, I think he took off Tommy to put on Brian McLaren, which you can probably see the point, because McLaren's more likely to get you a goal when you need it, right? But
Tommy can score goals, but...
Yeah, I know, but what I mean is that it wasn't a popular substitution at the time. And then the next thing, he puts the board up and he takes off Paul McStay and puts on Pierce O'Leary. Now, at the time, as fans, we're not appreciating, we're seeing a direct replacement, you think, who is he putting O'Leary on for? And then we saw Big Roy running forward for the back into midfield. And if ever one man was responsible for turning a game on its axis, then Roy Aitken did it that day. It was amazing the last 20 minutes.
Roy, I love Roy. I think we're good pals as well. Roy, you can always depend on Big Roy. And he would never let you down. You know what I mean? He would get forward. It's just when you're playing with a player, you know what he's going to do. And I loved that. I knew what Big Roy would be doing if he got forward and all that. And I would know where to go. And he came on and he just drove that team forward. It was, and the fans, Jim McLean also made a mistake, and I had it in the paper one day. I said he took a forward off and put a midfield player off on to go defensive. Mm-hmm. And soon as he'd done that, we seen that. Mm-hmm. And the fans gave a roar out about 16 or 17 minutes before the end, a big roar, as if they were like that. Mm-hmm. We can win this. Mm-hmm. The fans, I don't understand it, but they know things. And a big roar came
sometimes
up.
You can sense it.
A big roar came up and I looked up and I got a shiver through me and I went, my God, what was that? And we get the free kick and I thought David would take it because David was great at putting his foot right round the ball and bending it. He bent the ball about a yard outside the post and above the bar as well, and it came in and it came down. It wasn't a very hard struck ball, but he struck it and Hamish McAlpine had. It was unsavable where he was. And when that went, but I'll never understand. Davey ran to the Dundee United end. I never understood that after he scored that goal. I asked him a few times.
Well, he turned away, didn't he? He ran doing the problem.
I don't understand what he done. I think he was in disbelief that he just scored a wonder goal. He ran. I was like, that took ages trying to catch him. And it was... That was the only time I ever kissed a guy in my whole life in the football park. I kissed David that day. I'm quite embarrassed about it.
Well, you're talking about roars. When that free kick went in, I will never forget the roar that day. And so much so that if you look at footage again, you can actually see Dundee United players turning pale because the three quarters of the stadium by this time it has been silent, and then all of a sudden you've got this cascade of noise coming down. And the funny thing is as well, though, I don't know if you appreciate this, we could have scored four before you got the winner. No, Bo Johnson missed a sitter. If you went through and McAlpine saved up his legs.
That's right.
There was one that Roy got the byline, fired it across the goal, and two of you stood watching it thinking the other guy was going to get it, and it rolled right across the face of the goal. And I remember thinking, I hope we get a winning goal here because we really deserve it now. And then your famous moment came.
But that happened. If you look at the goal I scored that day with the head, and you look at Dundee United's defence, they were all in perfect position. A square back four, all in perfect position. The one thing, when the ball went out to Roy, I said, my God, I was still in the inside right position about 30 yards out. I was nowhere near in the goal. As soon as I seen Roy going on to the ball, he hadn't touched it yet. I said, he's only having one touch, and he has one touch, and then he puts side spin on it, and he fires it across the goal, and I said, I've got to get into this box. The first thing I seen Roy, one touch he's having, I said, I've got to get into the box, and I was in between Goff and Neri, I think, and the ball just came perfect for me, but it was pretty high as well, and I said, well, I'm going to check. I was just trying to get a header in this. I said, I've no chance of scoring, and see, as soon as I headed that, ball, it hit my forehead flush, and I headed it, and there was a lot of power in the ball, and I said, that's got a chance. But I was the last person to see the ball, because I was still up in the air, and the time I landed, the ball was in the net, so I never seen, because I was looking to see where I was landing, the ball was in the net, and I heard a roar. I saw I knew I scored, and I looked up, and the ball was nestling in the net, and I ran, and that was an unbelievable.
You feel on your knees, don't you?
I was doing to my knees. I'm doing to my knees, and I seen that crowd behind the goal. I've never seen such a big crowd in all my life. And I went like that. This is unbelievable. It's just an unbelievable moment. And I've got a great photograph of my face after that. It tells you everything about it.
Well, you did look emotional because I've seen photos like that myself. And the other thing is, well, you look drained. You looked as if, you know, it took a lot out of you to go.
Because my contract was up as well after that game. My contract, and David Brown said to, his contract was up as well, and he said to me, we've got to try and get a goal today, and if we can score and we won the cup, we'll get a good contract. I said, well, if I can get a goal today, I'm in Monday morning, I've a contract for the rest of my life. I said, that'll do me. And he said, I just do that, and that goal was scored, and still the crowd that day was just amazing.
Well, the other thing I always remember as well is I was in enclosure that day, and you know, just maybe about 90 seconds to go, Dundee United broke down the right hand side. Ralph Mullen ran right onto it, right, and Danny came across, and I remember thinking to myself, he doesn't get in here. Mum's writing in goal, and Danny, 35 at the time, right? Always a great competitor, and he just took him out. I don't mean took him out, fouled him. Nah. He got the ball, knocked the ball out, and he went right through him, and he knocked Millen onto the track. And a big, huge roar went up for the Celtic fans. I remember thinking, nah, this is it, we've done it now.
That was amazing. And after the game, I was holding the cup with David Provan, and I think David knew something. He said, Frank, let's enjoy this. It might be our last trophy together.
Oh no.
And he was spot on.
Oh no. Unfortunately, that's a bit prophetic, because now it takes us on to a sad part. And it, obviously, did he call you in, or did you go and see him?
I went in 9 o'clock Monday morning, I went straight in. David was cuddling me, he said, Frank, he said, I could admit I've been sacked.
Davey, he was cuddling you?
Oh, he'd cuddling me after it. Oh, we went up to the Grosvenor Hotel. He was cuddling me, and his wife was like that. And I have to say, and I hate to say this, all the wives were cuddling me.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they loved me or anything. Because at that time, we had to win a trophy.
To get a bonus?
Get a bonus, to get a good holiday at the end of the season. And all the wives were like, I've got a great holiday. Because I think we get £2,500 or something. After tax, it'd be £1,500. Uh-huh. That we don't get is a brilliant holiday. Mm-hmm. So all the wives were dead happy we won a trophy, because all the teams in the family were getting a holiday. And that's, you know, we were so badly paid that we had to win a trophy to get a good holiday at the end of the season.
So you must have been flabbergasted. But did he bring it up and somebody, did he just hit you, or did he...
No, I went in to see him, and I didn't see him the Monday morning. Said, Davey, I said, you know, he's played me in front of Brian McClure, right? Alan McInally is not even anywhere.
He wasn't even quoted,
right? So he's played me, I've scored the winner, and I'll save them for getting the sack, maybe. He probably wouldn't have got the sack, but he was struggling a bit if he never won that trophy. If he never won the Scottish Cup, he was struggling a bit. And I went in, and I said, right, I've got him. So I went in to see him, and said, I said, new contract. He said, well, I'm thinking about playing Mo Johnson up front next year. I said, okay, that's no problem, I can play with him. He said, but I'll get Brian McClure, I want to play beside Mo. I said, well, the two of them are no great besides her. I said, you know, I scored a lot of goals for you. I was first choice for you on Saturday, and I've scored the winner. So you gave me an opportunity, and I've helped
let's get this right. Was your contract up at this point?
My contract was up.
Okay, so freedom of contract means you
can't. No, I made a freedom of contract then.
No.
Celtic had me by the short and companies. They had me, they could do anyone, they could keep me, they didn't have to sell me. But they put a price up for £60,000, which was good for me. He said, I want to play Brian McClure up front next year. I said, that's fine. Mo Johnson up front next year. I said, that's fine. I'll go sub. Mm-hmm. I'll make sure they two are on their toes. He said, I want Alan McInally sub. And see, when he said he wanted Alan McInally sub, my heart just sank.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you want me to do it?
Mm-hmm.
He said, aye. I said, that's no problem. I said, at least you're honest with me. I said, and then I went, Jim McLean got in touch with me through a third party, and when he heard it was for sale, and he tried to buy me. That was a big mistake for me not to go to Dundee United.
Mm-hmm.
I should have went to Dundee United rather than St Mirren. But I went to St Mirren because my kids had good schools that they were at, and I didn't want to go to Dundee United and go and live up with Dundee, and they had got to change schools.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to St Mirren because of my kids. I wanted them to stay at that school.
Mm-hmm.
But if I never did any kids, I would have definitely went to Dundee United, because I would have been playing in a team with a good defence, a right good team, and I'm up front. So if I get a goal, we'll probably win the game.
Well, it would have been interesting to see the likes of Ewan Sterling up front, because he was a smashing player,
so they're another good centre forward.
Mm-hmm. And then they had guys like Kevin Gallagher at the time coming through, so that would have been fascinating.
I love going to Dundee United, but if he would have let me stay in Glasgow, I would have went.
He'd that rule, you had to stay in Dundee, didn't he?
I couldn't stay in Dundee because my kids were all at the schools. I had four kids, and I didn't want to change all that.
But you sound as if you took it rather well there, but you must have been gutted at the time.
Well, I was through life, I was brought up in Easter House, and it's a tough place, and that's a good thing for for me because it helped me with my football. But I was always, I took football, I just wanted to play football, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I was happy for Debbie Hay to do that because it, at least he was honest and upfront with me. Mm-hmm. So I can go for a pint with Debbie Hay anytime. He was upfront, he was honest with me. I can't, I've no complaints.
Have you met him since?
Oh, I've met him.
And has he ever mentioned the fact that he maybe made a wee mistake? Or?
We'll come back to Liverpool for a game and he drove me back to Liverpool, just me and him.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I would just like to apologise to you, Frank. He said, I made a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And letting you go, he said, I shouldn't have let you go. But he was honest enough to say that to me.
No.
A great guy, I love David Hay, and he let me go. I went to St Mirren and I won a Scottish Cup with him, which was fantastic.
Well, I want to move on to that actually, because I mean, your career certainly wasn't done. Who was it? Who was the foreign team that St Mirren played one night? They were 3-1 up, and those two goals in that injury time.
I think it was Hammerby. Was it Hammerby?
Hammerby?
No, Hammerby.
Tromso.
Don't know who it was. I came off in that game. We were.
Did you get a hat trick that day?
No, I forget. I even forget that game because I came off, and we were winning 1-0. We were winning 1-0. I think it was Hammerby.
Mm-hmm.
We were winning 1-0, and we drew 3 each with them over there. Mm-hmm, so we were winning 1-0. Even if we draw
1 each,
that's right, we're still
that's
through.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I think Campbell Money. We lost a goal with a minute to go, and he ran in the net and kicked and threw the ball up to take a quick centre to try and get a goal.
Mm-hmm.
But we were still in the lead,
and
I was in the bath. I was singing in the bath. I said, "That's us in the fourth round of the UEFA Cup." And Celtic were put out that season.
We get put out with Atletico Madrid that season.
That's right. And Celtic were put out, and I said, "This is amazing. Us going to this, lying in the bath, and then Alan Muller came in. I have never seen a guy." Is white and old looking and all my life. I went on to the park, he looked as if he was 25, young man, enjoying all the things in life, and he came in and he looked like a guy at 60, unwell, when he walked in. I said, "What? You alright? I thought it was something going to happen to him." I said, "You alright? Something wrong with you?" He said, "We lost 2 goals." I went, "What?" I was in the bath. I said, "What, you lost 2 goals?" He should never have taken me after that. You've got to keep your experienced players on the park. Mm-hmm. They can hold up the ball. They know how to slow the game down, and they should never have taken you off.
So, what I was going to ask as well is, you played against a lot of good defenders at the time in Scotland, and it was Miller, McLeish, and Hegarty, and Neary. And when you played against Rangers, the likes of Big Jackson, Forsyth, and Stevens gave you a hard time. They were quite intimidating players. Who was your hardest opponent, or most difficult opponent?
Warren Miller.
Was it really?
Far. He was the best defender in Scotland by a mile, no doubt about it, not even any question about it.
It's funny looking back now, because like, you tend to forget how good he was really when you see him in the telly and that kind of thing. You know, younger guys might not appreciate just what a good player he was.
I think you've got to have a spine in your team, and Aberdeen had that spine with Leighton, Miller and Strachan, and they always had good forwards and McGee and different players. They had Black, always they had a good spine in their team. And Willie Miller for me and Strachan were the two players that made Aberdeen tick.
Mm-hmm.
But not only that, Willie Miller had McLeish in front of him, who's a centre half, done his job brilliant, and always in rugby at the back, left back, and always had a good right back, go forward. They had a good defensive team, and that's why they were successful.
I think they worked more as a unit, didn't they, rather than as individuals.
The Celtic, we were brilliantly, we were the best team in Scotland going forward. But as a team, we never defended as well as Dundee United and Aberdeen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they get into European Cup finals and we never.
So you finished your career at Clyde, and I'm going to bring a game up, and I think you might remember it. It was Douglas Park Hamilton, because Clyde were moving about at the time. It's the last minute in the Scottish Cup. It's nothing each. Celtic have got a terrible team at the time. We're going through a real, around about 93, Liam Brady, a right bad patch. And it was a horrible winter's day that day. And I remember standing with a group of mates. And you ran down the wing and skint McNally, and then you skint Galloway, and you floated a ball to the back post. And I hope I've got the right guy's name. The wee guy called Jamie McCarron.
Jamie McCarron.
And he missed a sitter with about a minute to go.
I'm inside a few guys because I knew all the Celtic players, and I was about 30. I was 37, 38 at the time. And I was beating these guys, and I was looking for a wee gap. And I seen Jamie McCarron because I said he'll make a run in there. I just slipped the ball into him, and he was 10 yards out, and Oh, I had anywhere in the goal, you could put it, and Celtic were out.
That's right.
But I went in, I always remember that day, and I went in, and he should have scored. The directors were so happy he never scored.
Because they replayed Parkhead?
Replayed Parkhead, brought them in a fortune. They had no money. They didn't want him to win the game. He wanted a replay. You know what I mean?
But, I mean, you're at that age, and I always remember you sent it to them. McNally and Galloway were the centre half, and you laid that ball on a plate for that boy, right. And his bottle crashed.
He just went through, and he must have looked into the future and seen his name up in the Sonny papers Gabriel. and the television, because he would have been the biggest hero in world football that day.
Now, you finished your career at Clyde, and what age did you finish? Your late 30s, wasn't it?
Late 38. I actually went to Clyde because John Clark asked me, he was the manager at the time, and said, Frank, he said, I'm looking for a player up front, maybe score me 15 to 20 goals. I said, John, who are you going to get? How much money have you got to spend? Because I wasn't doing any work. I was struggling a bit. And I said, I don't know, John. I said, how much money have you got to spend? 30, 40,000? He said, no, I've not got any money at all. I need somebody, you know. I said, just off the street? I said, I don't know who could get. I said, he said, you want him to score 15 to 20 goals? I said, I don't know who you're going to get. And he made goals and hard up the ball. And he was talking about me, and I never caught on. I said, I don't know anybody, John. I said, you're living. He said, I'm talking about you. Can you come? And I went to Clyde, and I played my first two games, and I wasn't really fit, and the Clyde fans gave me some dog's abuse, and I got injured. I said, thank God I got injured. The Clyde fans were good, and then I got into the team, had a few wee games, and I got match fit, and all of a sudden, I was playing as good as I've ever played in my whole life, in my late 30s. I was playing outstanding. I was playing up front myself, and I thought these guys that could run, and I was just beating a guy. I was beating the centre half. I wasn't doing any running, and I was just laying the balls in for these guys, and we were scoring goals, and we were playing brilliant, and we went on to win the league. And that, mate, what happened? Why did that go down in history? I was running and got there. I was the first guy ever to win a Scottish Cup medal, a Scottish League Cup medal, a first Premier division. League, a first division with St Mirren, and a second division with Clyde. So nobody's ever done that.
That was the first Scottish football. The clean sweep.
Clean sweep. Nobody's ever done that in Scottish football.
That's quite an achievement.
So I was really happy. I didn't know about that then, and I was really happy about that. That made my day that day.
Well, I'll tell you what else I remember about you. You and George both played on to late 30s. I think George might have been touching 40 by the time he finished at Kilmarnock. And I always remember, it may have been both of you or either of you, and you said that the worst feeling in your life is when you need to get up. You said, because you've been so used to it, and it's a love, and then, you know, time catches up everybody, and everybody's got to chuck it. But I remember Charlie went to Clyde, and he was only 31, 32 at the time.
Do you know what I was getting?
But the point I'm making is, Charlie says, he came out in the paper and says, I cannot motivate myself in front of crowds of one in 2,000. And I thought, that actually, at that age, it shouldn't be about that. It should be about love of the game, because you've made your money.
I know. I was at Clyde. They never gave me any money. They paid me £20 a week expenses. Charlie came. I scored 16, 17 goals for Clyde, and we won the league. Charlie came a year after, I got £2,000 a week.
No, no. Well, that's my point. And then halfway through his contract, he chucked it because he couldn't motivate himself. You're thinking, I was disappointed, I don't have to say, but when I read that.
Well, just being honest, it couldn't motivate himself. I've always played football for the sake, because I love it. And Charlie loved his football. I loved playing. He was a good guy. He was just a tremendous player to play with. And I loved the things he'd done. See the goals he scored and the things he'd done, and he would nutmeg people. And I loved that, you know. Brilliant.
So the last thing just to say, Frank, you wrote a book a couple of years ago called Totally Frank. So what kind of feedback did you have? Was it an experience that you enjoyed?
I didn't really want to write it, but there was a few things in the paper said about me I wasn't happy about, and I wanted to put a few things right. I've had a gambling problem in my life, and that's a bad thing to have in your life. It's an addiction. I don't smoke, I don't drink a lot, I don't, you know, doing other things. I had the gambling thing, and I wrote about that as well. So people reading it would be reading about football and that side of it.
Did you find it quite therapeutic writing it because of all the problems that you've had?
Oh, that was really good. I enjoyed it. That's a good point you made. I really did find it. It helped me, actually. And everything in it is the truth, you know, how I went through my life. I really struggled to get back into the real life again.
Mm.
And I always remember this guy, Joe Boyce. He was a painter, and I said, "Frank, I know you're a joiner, I know go back to the joinery." And he took me up to Drumchapel, and this guy went like, he said, "Right, Frank, you can start here, you own £620. No, I had no money at the time. I was skint, and I was going through a divorce. And he said, "I'll give you £620 to rough cast this house, to put all the partitions and all that on Gyprock." And I was like, I said, "How long is that going to take me?" I said, "That'll take me 2 weeks." But anyway, I started doing it. I said, "Right, I don't know if I'm going to do it or not."
Mm.
So he said, "You can start in this house this afternoon." So I went down, and I went down and I sat in the canteen, had a cup of tea, and I said, "But what day? I said, "Have I really got a choice?" And that was the hardest part of my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting in that canteen, will I go up and start there or will I know? Will I go up and start or will I know? Nobody to talk to anything. And I said, I'll go up and have a look at it. And I went up, and there was a few Rangers supporters on the job, and I went up to start it. And somebody had done a big shit right in the middle.
Remember reading that in your book?
Right in the middle. Mm. And the reason I know it was recent, there was steam coming up and like that. And I looked at it and I was like, "Ah, do I need this?" And then I was like to myself, "What do I do? Do I get a wee shovel, get rid of that, start working, or do I get home and do nothing?" And I went back to the canteen, went back up, shovel, done that. Within 3 weeks, I was doing one of them a week and getting £600. And I said, "That's the best thing I've ever done. Get rid of that shit."
There's no way to be said for all this.
I know I'm saying that shit, and people are saying, "Oh, that's horrible."
Mm.
But that's reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've took up a lot of your time, Frank. I just wish, all that's left to say is to wish you all the best for all the Celtic fans out there and whatever you're doing now, and wish you all the best for the future. And thanks for the memories.
Thank you.
Guitar. I hope you enjoyed that podcast with St. Anthony and Frank McGarvey and his open discussion about his time at Celtic and other things. Obviously, the music world has been tinged with sadness the last couple of weeks with the untimely death of David Bowie and then Glenn Frey from the Eagles, who are the music choice on this week's podcast. Although the one positive to take from it from all of us, I suppose, is the tremendous changes in medical science that the gist of what everyone was saying was that 69 and 67 were quite young for people to have passed away. Anyway, there's some events coming up from the Celtic FC Foundation, things that Celtic are ticking along nicely with the 8 goals against Hamilton and 4 goals against Dundee United. And if Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles hadn't been running the line at United game, it would have probably been 6. And if it wasn't for Michael McGovern and the Hamilton goal, it would have been 10. So things are good there. Celtic FC Foundation, I think, have just announced the zip slide, which is happening on the Saturday of the Easter weekend. So get yourself along to do that. It's bigger and better than last year's. I really enjoyed it. So anything else the foundation are doing, get in contact, Celtic FC Foundation, and see what there is. It's in the heart of our club, and fantastic to see that the two banners now right at the front door of Celtic Park are not commercial and they're not nothing. They're advertising the Celtic charity, something that Fergus McCann brought back in 94. So anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady. That was him, St. Anthony, and I'm leaving you with Ziggy Stardust. So it's enough of me saying goodnight and God bless. Goodnight.
Like a